degraded when back in the 1800s when people were running huge herds of sheep over the sierras and grazing the high meadows. But now with meadow restoration, there's another nonprofit called Point Blue, and they're collaborating with the Forest Service to try and do something like 30,000 acres of meadow restoration. So that's part of it. And then that water that's in those meadows, sometimes it goes down, it filters down into the rock. And then that becomes what they call mountain block recharge. So it's water that's gone into the mountainside and it's going to come back out farther down, either in springs or maybe it'll even go into aquifers that are down in the under the Central Valley.
Right. Yeah.
And we don't know a lot about how those waters move around. So we'd like to, one of the research areas that the Department of Water Resources is interested in is to say, hey, can we start to figure this out? How long does water stay in the mountain? So does that give us some kind of a cushion against drought times because there's water that will continue to come out for a number of years?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic itself, is like how could you monitor, you know, how can you study water movement underground?
Yeah, right, coming down off the mountainside.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, how is it traveling? How is it when it does go into aquifers? How is it actually moving? What is it moving through? How is it moving?
How long does it take to get there? How can we encourage it to go in there to begin with? If we can bring our landscapes back into some kind of balance with the forest management and with the meadow restorations, then that builds resilience in the whole system. It makes the whole system a little bit more able to recover from either droughts or heat waves and things like that.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, we're out of time. I want to bring you back.
Yes.
I know. I want to bring you back again real soon, though.
Okay. Well, thanks so much. And congratulations to your first interviewee as well. But thanks a lot, Ron. Take care.
Okay, thanks, Jim. We'll probably talk to you Saturday at the farmer's market.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
The farmer's market.
And you've been listening to the North State Water Report here on 90.1 FM KZFR, People Powered Community Radio. And stay tuned now for Zephyr News.
Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features contributions from the Chico State Orion, Chico Soul, and the California Report. Segments from KZFR community members include coverage of the Chico No Kings March by Hope Brianna Campbell, a segment on the Butte County Supervisor Meeting by Hope Brianna Campbell, and a piece on Chico State Fraternities by David Foos.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. Thousands of people filled downtown Chico this week as the Festival for Democracy transformed City Plaza into a vibrant space for music, community, and peaceful protests. The event was part of a coordinated nationwide No Kings Day of Action, organized in opposition to the Trump administration and in response to what organizers and participants described as ongoing concerns about the state of democracy in the United States. Across the country, similar gatherings took place, but in Chico, the turnout stood out, drawing a diverse crowd of residents from across the region. From the early hours of the day, people began arriving at City Plaza, many carrying handmade signs with messages calling for political accountability, protection of civil liberties, and expanded access to voting. Others came to simply listen, learn, and take part in what organizers described as a community-centered approach to civic engagement. For many in attendance, the event was as much about connection as it was about protest. Families with children, college students, longtime residents, and first-time activists all mingled in the plaza, creating a safe space that felt inclusive and accessible. Informational booths lined the area, offering resources on voter registration, community programs, and ways to get involved beyond the festival. Despite the strong political messaging, the tone of the event remained peaceful and organized throughout the day. Volunteers helped coordinate logistics, ensuring that the large crowd could move safely through the area while maintaining a welcoming environment. Participants described a sense of unity and shared purpose. Some said they attended to voice frustration, while others said they came looking for hope and found it in the sheer number of people gathered together. Events like the Festival for Democracy reflect a broader trend of civic engagement happening at the local level, where national issues are increasingly being discussed in community spaces. In Chico, the strong turnout suggests that residents are not only paying attention, but are eager to take part in those conversations. As the festival came to a close, many attendees lingered, continuing conversations and exchanging information. Organizers expressed gratitude for the turnout and emphasized that this is just one step in a larger effort to keep communities involved and informed. The message at the center of the day was clear. Democracy is something that lives in everyday actions, in showing up, speaking out, and staying connected. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. At the Butte County Board of Supervisors meeting, supervisors took a closer look at item 4.7, an annual review of the Sheriff's Office military equipment use policy. Along with the required yearly report and ordinance renewal that allows the continued use of that equipment. This item is part of a broader statewide effort to increase transparency and oversight when it comes to law enforcement's access to military-style tools. Under California law, agencies like the Butte County Sheriff's Office must present detailed reports each year outlining what equipment they have, how it's being used, and whether those uses align with an approved policy adopted by the county. Sheriff's locals emphasize that this equipment is not intended for routine patrols or everyday policing. Instead, it is reserved for high-risk or emergency situations, such as active shooter incidents, search and rescue operations in difficult terrain, or responses to natural disasters like wildfires, which are a reoccurring concern in Butte County. During the discussion, supervisors reviewed whether the department use of this equipment remained consistent with the established policy. That policy outlines strict guidelines, including when equipment can be deployed, who is authorized to use it, and what kind of training is required. The goal is to ensure that these tools are used responsibly, proportionately, and only when necessary to protect life and property. Sheriff Corey states at the Board of Supervisors meeting,
"The equipment that we use that we're going to talk about today is utilized in high-risk, dangerous situations. And what the equipment does, in essence, is it gives us time, distance, and information that allows us to make better decisions about the situation. And then our response allows for our deputies to be safer. And as importantly, the people that we are dealing with are often much, much safer. The fact is, this equipment helps us protect ourselves and protect the community.
Supporters of the policy argued that the equipment plays a vital role in keeping both the deputies and residents safe. In a county like Butte, where communities are spread out and emergency response times can vary, having access to specialized tools can make a significant difference in critical moments. They also point to past incidents where such equipment has been used for rescue operations or to safely resolve dangerous situations. Some board members also emphasize the importance of clear communication with the public, making sure residents understand not only what equipment is being used, but why it is necessary and how its use is regulated. This includes making reports accessible and encouraging community members to engage in the process. In the end, item 4.7 represents more than just an administrative update. It reflects a broader balancing act between preparedness and accountability, between equipping law enforcement to respond to emergencies and ensuring that those powers are exercised with transparency and community trust. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
You are listening to the Orion News Weekly Report, brought to you by California State University Chico, KZFR, KCSE, and KWQA Maker Radio. The reporters and editors of the Orion work tirelessly to bring you relevant, timely, and engaging news, sports, opinion, and entertainment.
Chico State's North State Planning and Development Collective has received $1.85 million from the California Wildlife Conservation Board to restore habitat along Battle Creek for endangered winter run Chinook salmon. The project centers on removing about 3,000 feet of rock levees that currently force young salmon through the creek, preventing them from resting and feeding. The project aims to restore the broader ecosystem. Returning salmon to the river also returns ocean nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus that enrich the surrounding land and support wildlife. Construction is expected to take about 9 months, after which native species will be planted in the area. The collective is also working alongside local tribal communities to ensure any cultural artifacts uncovered during construction are handled respectfully. Hundreds of Chico residents gathered at City Plaza on March 28th for the Festival for Democracy, part of the nationwide No Kings protest movement against President Trump's policies. Hosted by Indivisible Chico, the event combined political speeches, live music, and local vendors to create a space for both protest and community connection. Attendees expressed concern over issues including immigration enforcement, social program cuts, and the war in Iran, with many carrying handmade signs and flags. Speakers encouraged the crowd to continue civic conversations beyond the event. The diverse turnout, spanning multiple generations, reflected a shared sentiment around protecting democratic values, with one attendee summing up the mood simply by saying, quote, "We don't have kings in the United States. We got rid of that 250 years ago.
This past weekend, Wildcat softball came home to play the Stanislaus State Warriors. In their fourth conference series of the year, the Wildcats came up big, going 3-1 over the weekend. Game one was scoreless through five, but the sixth inning told the whole story. Warriors scored one, while the Cats blew it open with four and took the game with defense in the seventh, winning 4-1. In game two, both teams finished with five hits. The Warriors capitalized on five Wildcat errors, stealing the game away 3-1. Game three went to the Cats 4-1. Offensively, Brianna Swihart went a perfect 3-for-3 at the plate, and from the circle, Amelie Valdez earned her eighth career win of the season and dropped down to a 1.94 ERA. Game four was to decide the series, and the Wildcats came through again, winning 4-0. Allie Lewis struck early with a home run in the first, paired with a shutout from Bella Tavares, earning the Cats a 3-1 series win. The Chico State Wildcats now sit at 8-8 in conference play and third in the CCAA,
The Cats stay home for their third home conference series of the year against SF State on Thursday at 1 p.m. These stories and much, much more can be found at theorion.com. Today's narrators are Hannah Cabral and Josh Shannon. This week's authors include Alexa Lima, Chris Hutton, and Jameson Lee Young. It's been your boy Josh Shannon, signing off.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. In the March 12th episode of Zephyr News, the Chico State Orion discussed the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, or FIRE, accusing Chico State of violating free speech by pausing recruitment of Interfraternity Council, or ISC, fraternities and sororities for 1 year due to allegations of hazing in fall 2025. Orion noted that not every fraternity or sorority was accused of engaging in hazing activities, which is why FIRE is accusing Chico State of violating students' free speech rights and the right to free association while not meaningfully improving safety on campus. FIRE called on the university to reinstate fraternity and sorority recruitment for the 2025-26 school year. The university replied that it would not change its position. Since that report, FIRE has contacted Zephyr News and provided copies of the university's letter of reply to FIRE and FIRE's second letter to Chico State. FIRE insists that the ban is an unconstitutional form of collective punishment that violates students' rights to free expression and association. Chico State argues that the ban only affects seven fraternities and that fraternities are free to disassociate from the university if they wish to continue recruiting this spring. In a letter dated March 20th, Chico State replied to FIRE stating the following, quote, "The university vehemently disagrees the pause is a form of punishment or guilt by association or otherwise violates the law. The university acted based on facts, not conjecture about hazing." Chico State noted there were seven fraternity chapters that serve as members of the IFC. Last semester, there were 11, four of which decided to disaffiliate with the university. The university stated that hazing allegations, which were substantiated, included requiring students to take ice baths, engage in unhealthy cardiovascular activity, and/or requiring underage students to consume large quantities of alcohol, all of which are violations of university policy. Chico State also pointed out that fraternities are always free to disaffiliate with the university, else they must abide by this and other safety-related measures. The university stated that its mission is to, quote, "eliminate hazing and foster a culture of inclusion, respect, and accountability across all student organizations." It also noted that, quote, "The courts have made it clear that university decisions are owed substantial deference as long as they are rooted in academic considerations and do not constitute viewpoint discrimination." FIRE replied to the university in a letter dated March 30th, in which it reiterated that the restriction burdens students' and fraternities' associational freedoms and called again for Chico State to lift the ban. FIRE referred to a Supreme Court decision in the case of Healy versus James involving a public college's refusal to recognize a chapter of Students for a Democratic Society, or SDS. In that case, the court declared that, quote, "Guilt by association alone, without establishing that an individual's association poses the threat feared by the government, is an impermissible basis on which to deny First Amendment rights." FIRE further notes that under the ban, quote, "All IFC-affiliated fraternities, even those not accused of any crime or policy violation, are enjoined from recruiting new members for an entire semester solely because of the alleged action of other fraternities and their members." It notes that the ban imposes significant practical deprivations on IFC fraternities who, quote, "cannot find new recruits to replace outgoing seniors. This impairs their ability to collect dues and, for fraternities that rely on full housing occupancy, rent, which consequently threatens a fraternity's financial sustainability. And, quote, Chico's state thrusts fraternities into the danger of having to choose between two evils: disband due to insufficient membership and funding, or continue to recruit and survive by disaffiliating from the university. Zephyr News will continue to follow this story as it develops. This is David Foos for Zephyr News.
This is Sunny for Chico Soul. This week, pollution burden in the low-income neighborhoods of Chapman and Mulberry, jobs and community programming in fire prevention, and No King's Day 3 in Chico. In local environmental news, Yucheng Tang has found that the low-income neighborhoods of Chapman and Mulberry are the most pollution burdened in Chico. Both neighborhoods sit within a roughly triangular area bounded by Highway 99, Humboldt and Park Avenues, and Comanche Creek. This area shoulders a pollution burden worse than nearly 93% of California. Pollution burden refers to both the contamination people are directly exposed to and the broader health and environmental risks pollutants pose to surrounding communities. This finding comes from Cal EnviroScreen 5.0, a mapping tool developed by California's Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, which uses 23 indicators to identify communities disproportionately burdened by pollution and socioeconomic factors. The draft map was released on January 28. In local news, Leslie Layton reported that thousands of people marched from 10th Avenue up Esplanade Bike Path on Saturday for the No Kings 3 protest, which culminated at City Plaza with the Festival for Democracy. The two events were scheduled to coincide with what some are calling the biggest day of nationwide protests in U.S. history. One march organizer from ReSisters expected a larger turnout in Chico, but also noted that smaller nearby communities were holding their own No Kings protests events, some for the first time. Here's one protester speaking with Chico Soul.
I came today to show how I'm in solidarity with people who believe that the current administration should probably be disbanded and maybe even arrested for crimes against humanity.
In local jobs and community programming news, Linda Joy Fenley has a story about jobs in fire prevention and forestry with details from the president of the California Forestry Association, advertising a growing availability of jobs in the forestry industry. The Forestry Sector Jobs Initiative website currently has just under 100 jobs advertised, including one in Oroville. That number should increase to 150 to 250 jobs in the near future. Also, according to local organizers at the Butte Fire Safe Council, there will be an all-day California Tree School event at Paradise High School on April 18th. Those who register will be able to enroll in four classes from a catalog of 21 options, ranging from defensible space and home hardening to forestry pathology and nature journaling. The deadline to register is April 3rd, and some of the classes have already been filled. A $70 fee will cover all four courses and lunch. In case you missed it, Juan Flores posted a video about Maker's Muse, an arts festival that took place in Chico on March 20th and 21st. Here's Samantha Zangrilli talking about IDEA Fab Lab, which she owns and operates in Chico.
The whole concept behind IDEA Fab Lab is that it's a maker space. It's a space for artists, for people who are interested, for people who like to do crafts to come and be able to access machinery and tools that they would not otherwise be able to access.
From Idea Fab Lab came the idea to host the festival as a celebration of creativity and community. This has been Sunny for Chico Soul. Follow the latest at chicosoul.org, including additional details to our notice about two workshops on April 25th and May 16th for dreamers needing to renew their DACA status.
From KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Carlos Cabrera Lomeli in for Mavi Bolaños. It will soon be a month since the start of the U.S.-Israel war with Iran. In response to U.S. military action, the Iranian regime has restricted which trade ships can pass through the Strait of Hormuz, a critical passageway not only for oil moving from the Middle East to North America, but also for fertilizer, the fertilizer American farmers need to start growing crops. The agricultural industry has started to ring the alarm bells about the potential impacts the crisis at Hormuz could have on food prices. But California farms are quite unique from the rest of the country. So what happens here is probably different from what we see in the headlines. Here to walk us through how geopolitics actually affects consumers in the Golden State is UC Davis professor and former assistant secretary for economics at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Daniel Sommer. Welcome, Professor Sommer.
Yeah, good morning.
Let's start off by looking at the calendar. We're almost at the end of March. For California farmers, why is this time of the year significant?
California's a little different than some places, and it's a big state. So if I went to Ventura, they're about ready to start harvesting avocados. Here in the Sacramento Valley where I live, people have been planting, processing tomatoes to be harvested next fall. The tomatoes are going to use a lot of fertilizer, for example. So that's something of importance. A number of the annual crops, the rice guys will plant 500,000 acres of rice in another month or so, but they're getting ready for it now. So it really, place by place, crop by crop.
And how much does the price of fertilizer factor into what California farmers decide to grow, Professor?
Mostly not at all. But let me give you an example where it might matter. We grow hundreds of thousands of acres of alfalfa, which is a nitrogen-fixing crop, doesn't use much fertilizer, an alternative feed to dairy cows, and in fact goes along with alfalfa in some cases, is corn silage. Corn silage uses lots of nitrogen. And that planting decision will have been made here in March. If somebody looked at that and said, holy smokes, fertilizer prices are going to go up, I'll switch some of my acreage from corn silage to alfalfa. And you may have seen somebody make that decision or be making that decision here in March. But the other thing to recognize is that farmers don't get up in the morning and say, oh, holy smokes, I better buy some fertilizer. They will have contracted and actually purchased and taken delivery of fertilizer in the middle of the winter. And that's something, much of what we're talking about of fertilizer will be decisions that are people making months, maybe 6 months from now, many of them for the 2027 planting decision.
So could we be seeing the impacts of, you know, the crisis at Hormuz later on in the future, next year, the year after that?
It could be, you know, and that depends on how quickly does this get resolved. I will say there have been immediate impacts. And remember, farmers use a lot of fuel, not just fertilizer. So one of their costs on fuel is the price of diesel, but also the price of gasoline going up.
Right. Let's talk about that. So what else is driving up food prices? What other factors do California farmers have to deal with right now?
The most important thing I would say from this war for consumers and for farmers in the sense of demand for food is a potential recession that a lot of people are talking about because of higher prices for gasoline that hits everybody's budget. And people say, gee, I love strawberries, but they're off the budget here for a month or two. So those kind of demand hits hitting consumers directly and farmers indirectly are crucially important.
It seems like consumers will have to deal with higher prices no matter what happens. UC Davis Professor Dan Sommer, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You can find extensive reporting on how the Golden State is responding to the war in Iran at kqed.org.
Fallout continues from the last-minute cancellation of the gubernatorial debate that was scheduled Tuesday on the USC campus after four candidates of color said the debate criteria unfairly excluded them. KQED's Scott Schaefer reports.
USC used a combination of polling percentages